Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. Welcome to another edition of Leave It In Ring Radio, my boxing fans' official radio show. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my host, Gabriel Montoya, writer from Max Boxing. You know, it's almost that time to start really getting hyped up about the fights that are going to be showing this Friday and Saturday. You know, we got a lot of fights lined up, man. A lot of things for us to really be excited about. Bring out the barbecue pits, bring out the ice coolers with some beers in them, and sit back and relax. We're going to be entertained Friday and Saturday. You want to call in, talk to us here on Leaving the Ring, 347-215-7598. You're more than welcome to talk about the upcoming fights. We got Timothy Bradley and Devon Alexander over there in Michigan, Pontiac. We're going to be facing off two of the best 140 fighters in the division right now. Timothy Bradley being at the top of his game right now, and Devon Alexander wanting to get him off the top of his game. Definitely going to find out who is the better fighter on Saturday night, okay? It's up to your pick and all that. I really want to hear everybody's pick and stuff. I know everybody knows that I'm going for Timothy Bradley. I think Timothy is just going to do his thing. It's not going to be an easy win. This is not going to be an easy trail for him to jog up. This is definitely, there's going to have a lot of bumps. There's going to have a lot of steeps in there that he's maybe even trip and fall. He's going to have some difficulties there to really find his rhythm and his range, and really have a good game plan and stick to it. Not just one, but two. You know, so I'm really excited about this fight. So go in and call in right now if you want to tell us who you got. You got the guy with the big dome or the big guy with a small voice? It's all up to you and stuff, yeah. Let me introduce my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. What's up, brother?
The big guy with the small voice. that's very funny. I'm doing good, man. I'm just chilling. I'm just, you know, coming back from the store, grabbing my energy drink so we can plow through these next couple hours. I'm excited for this weekend, dude. I don't know about you, but
Pumped.
It's always something special, dude, when you got undefeated fighters going at it. Only way to find out who's best, and they're going to fight. I think a lot of things have been really, a lot of people really have focused on the low ticket sales and trashing the venue. Nobody's going to see this fight, and people are going crazy. It's still going to be on HBO. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people that are bitching and moaning at the same time may not have actually gone to see this fight in Vegas, you know? I wonder what the percentage of fans are. I know I did a kind of a mini poll on my Twitter, and there was only like a few people that said, you know, I was planning on going. But some of those people were media, you know, that would generally go to Vegas. So, I mean, I think it's kind of a disaster what has happened. But at the same time, we can't forget, like, this is a hell of a fight. And this is exactly what we always ask for. And so in a sense, you know, it's like, don't let the negativity about the ticket sales. Everybody wants to be the business guy. Everybody wants to be P.T. Barnum and explain to Bob Arum and everybody else how to run the business. You know, nobody really actually knows how to do it. And I think, you know, we've covered it pretty well how much they've screwed up this promotion. But at the same time, we got a great fight in front of us, and we should enjoy that instead of letting the negativity kind of overshadow us.
You know, and you're absolutely right, Gabe. I mean, we got to say something here is that we have really honestly underlined the fall and the failure of the promotional thing. But I think we kind of forgot that a fight with this magnitude, a fight like this, you know, even though we said it's a little premature, but it's still mature enough to give us excitement. It's still mature enough to make us maybe talk about this for weeks to come. It's still mature enough to promote itself because we have two guys that are in their prime, two hungry junior welterweights, two guys right now that really honestly have nothing really really fair to say about each other. They really have a personal dislike about each other right now going into the ring. Maybe after the fight, they'll you know, hug and make up, you know, like most classy fighters do, which I'm pretty sure they'll end up doing and stuff. But this is a fight that should have been promoted on its own just because of the two names. But that's the problem with boxing and stuff. We focus on the other guys that already have established names that are a little bit more easier to market than two guys right now that need to really work for the effort for the applaudance of an audience, you know?
Yeah, you know, the thing that kind of scares me about this fight, though, is that, you know, you got a southpaw. I've been watching tons of tape the last 2 days trying to make my pick. I've been leaning towards Bradley, but I'll make my pick later in the show. Headbutts, man. When you got a southpaw fighting an orthodox guy, and Tim Bradley's got a big dome, and it comes forward, you know, he kind of leads with it at times. There's several fights where it happens. We could see this thing end early on a headbutt. You know, that would be kind of the ugly cherry on top, the rotten cherry on top of a promotion that, you know, there's not a lot of people there. Everybody's kind of bitched and moaned. They took the money and run. HBO already, you know, gave them a rematch clause plus another fight. You know, so they're really invested, like, I think, like 25% of their budget for the year,
right,
in these two fighters. And not just in this one fight, but in these two fighters. And we could end up seeing, stylistically, not the best fight in the world. This isn't Hagler-Hearns. I mean, in terms
no.
of, you know, he doesn't have to worry about Bradley's kind of Hagler-esque. You know, he's kind of blue-collar, and he doesn't bring a lot of frills to his game. But he's, like, good at everything, you know, or good at a lot of things. And on the other side, it's not like you got Tommy Hearns. You don't have to worry about that left hand of doom. You know, maybe the uppercut you do, the right uppercut. But it may not end up being that good of a fight. And that's kind of what I worry. You know, I hope it's a great fight. I always hope for a great fight.
You know, it's funny because you did, you know, about the whole headbutts here, you know, and I was thinking about it. And Ashley was going to download a video. I just... You know, I end up getting sidetracked with a bunch of other things that are kind of popping off, you know, here on Leaving the Ring and stuff. But, I talked a little bit about what Alexander, his keys of victory in this fight, you know, which is he is a taller guy. He's a lankier guy. And how he'd want to make sure that this fight is in the inside. Where Timothy is basically going to have to get low like he did with Kendall Holt. If he decides to try to be tall, okay, and use his height, it's going to benefit Alexander all the way. You know, Alexander does not want to get in a shootout with Timothy, even though Timothy doesn't have that pop, but he has that volume of pop where he can discourage you in the throwing punches, where he basically could shut you down. You know, we've seen that with Nate Campbell. We've seen that with other opponents that, even with Peterson, you know, when Timothy Bradley got in the ring with her, you know. I'm really interested in how Alexander is going to bring himself into the ring. How is he going to take ring generalship against Timothy Bradley? Because Timothy is definitely going to go for the gusto in the beginning. Once that bell rings, I could see Timothy trying to gain control right away to show him you are in with the big boys now. You're in with the unified junior welterweight champion of the world. That's pretty much his statement and what he wants to do. Alexander's got to be smart. He's got to not fall for that bait. He's got to be really, really collective in the shots that he decides to throw here. Gabe, I don't know. Am I wrong? Or?
No, because Bradley is really going to take it. He's going to look to beat that body up. I mean, if you really hang your hat on a bad performance or a blueprint on how to beat Alexander, you look at the Kotelnik fight. You know, and Kevin Cunningham, I talked to him. I had an interview go up this week with him, and he was basically saying how it was kind of almost Zab Judah, you know, versus Baldemir, where he was, you know, doing too much promotion. And granted, he was at home for the first time in a major fight, the first time he was a champion fighting at home, not just a, you know, local boy prospect. He was a champion and or a title holder, however you want to define that. And it was very distracting for Devin. You know, he was doing commercials and all that stuff. You know, I'm not sure if I buy that excuse. I should have a good training camp, be focused, but Cunningham said, like, you know, we had a great camp. He just wasn't all there. And you look at the Kotelnik fight, and he gets to the body on Alexander. Alexander kind of throws too many punches. I think thinking he's just going to blow this guy out of there. He doesn't. And then the back end of the fight, he doesn't have as much energy, and he's really got to work for it. And arguably, in my opinion, lost that fight. I think Bradley's going to follow the same plan, get to the body early, stay within himself, not overextend, so that he doesn't get, you know, caught with that uppercut, you know, leaning in. Although Bradley does have a tendency to kind of come over that front foot and be there for the five hole, you know. So it's going to be interesting. I agree with you, though, that Alexander needs to really meet out his energy. Don't go out there, you know, swinging for the fences right off the bat. It's going to be a slow build, you know, in order to beat Tim Bradley. You got to break him down slowly and be very patient, because he's going to adjust. You know, I think he has more room to adjust in some ways than Alexander does.
Absolutely. I completely agree on that. You know, who you got? Devon Alexander or Timothy Bradley, if you want to call in right now to leave in the ring, the lines are open. 347-215-7598. If you are calling in right now, please stay on hold. Our producer, David Chen, will put you in a private room and get your name and your info, and we'll patch you in. Really quick, Gabe, let's patch in a fight fan right now. Shelly wants to talk Timothy Bradley and Devon Alexander. You're on live right now.
Hello?
Hello? Yep. What's up, brother? You're on live with us.
Oh, no, this is not Shelly. This is Silly Rabbit. That's
Silly
my fantasy boxing name.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Everything's all good, man. I have to agree with you guys on a lot. Like Gabriel was saying that, you know, this is a fight. You know, what we always want to see is we want to see guys that are matched up pretty much even though it's early in their career, but they're still right here, right now, both kind of pretty much matched up good, so we can say, well, who is the better of the two? And, you know, this can turn into, if it's a barn burner, this can turn into one of those, you know, part two and then the rubber match fights that, you know, boxing really needs right now. But I also agree with you guys. I think it's going to come down to conditioning in the end, in the later rounds. What do you think?
You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, man, I agree on that. Conditioning, and you know the thing too, man, that – don't get me wrong. I like Devon Alexander because some folks are like, who are you picking? And I said, you know, Timothy Bradley. And they're like, why not Devon? And I said, listen, this is the whole thing here. I think really this match weighs a lot more on Devon Alexander's shoulders than it does for Timothy. Just because of the fact that Timothy's been in Alexander's position so many times already, that this is for once, I think Timothy, he kind of feels, I don't have a whole lot to prove on this one. You know,
right.
When he does have a lot to prove in this one, he's got a very durable, dangerous, and potentially a guy that can beat him and knock him out.
Yeah,
I think it comes down to discipline, mental discipline. You know, I think Bradley might be the stronger of the two in that regard. He's older. He's 27. To Alexander's 23. You know, Alexander. You know, they can say whatever they want about that last fight. The fact of the matter is, he had a rough fight. That should have been something of a showcase, or, you know, the other 140 pounders is, you know, you do two ways to decide who's best: common opposition and fight each other. And the common opposition, Tomek didn't fight Bradley, but Amir Khan did and handled him easily. Maidana struggled with him. Alexander arguably lost to him. And you know, that styles make fights, but at the same time, you know, I don't know if he's coming in with the most confidence in the world. Bradley just beat a welterweight. So he's got confidence coming down in weight. I can handle whatever comes my way at 140. It's going to be interesting. I tend to think that Bradley's a little more mature guy, although maybe it's because I was talking to Cunningham and he kind of broke things down. I mean, Devin's kind of an overachiever. You know, he was fighting DeMarcus Corley 2 years ago at 13-0.
Right.
He's a guy they believed in really early on to take chances with. I'm tending to lean with Alexander at this point.
Who you got, Silly Rabbit? Who you got, brother?
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. Today I was on BoxRec, and tonight I'm going to go home and watch some footage because I'm struggling with my prediction today. Well, maybe I can get my prediction. So, but, man, I'm telling you, I had a couple. My thing is that somebody is going to be stopped, but it's either going to be earlier in the late round. But I'm not going to do my prediction yet, but, you know, it seems like Alexander has the advantage earlier on. And that Timothy Bradley has the advantage later on in the round.
You know what? I agree. I agree with you on that one. I definitely agree with you on that one. Devon is definitely going to impose his will and let Timothy know that the storm is going to be really mellow in Michigan. You know? Thank you, bro, for calling in, man.
All right. Thank you.
And thank you, man. You know, I think if we get into stoppages, if it's a TKO, it's going to be late, and it's going to be Bradley stopping Alexander. If it's a KO, it's going to come out of nowhere, and it's going to be mid-rounds, and it'll be Alexander. I think that's where he's going to be the most dangerous, is early to mid. It's going to be tight early, and then they're going to loosen up in the middle. And I think Devon will have some advantages in speed and length there. But then late, you know, that just sounds like a Tim Bradley fight if it's a late stoppage, you know.
Yeah,
if they break him down, you know.
And the thing, too, is Timothy has got to establish being low. You know, he's got to get low where like he did with Kendall Hall. After getting dropped with Kendall, he adjusted by staying low and really not even concentrating and going to the head. He just went to that body. And I think that with Alexander's style, that's the way to really kind of get to him, to slow him down, to take away some of that power that he's going to bring early on in those rounds and to break him down. I'm not sure, though, Gabe, if Timothy can stop him. But I think he could just break his will. I think if that's one thing that Timothy does very well out of what he does in a whole is break fighters' wills. You know, let's patch in really quick. Corey, who wants to talk, Timothy Bradley and Devon Alexander. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring, brother. What's on the line?
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Doing fantastic,
good,
brother.
Man.
Okay, just had a quick question for you. I like Devon Alexander and Timothy Bradley, but I just had a quick question. I want to know if you had to fight out of those two, who would you rather be? Would you rather have be the person with the heart or the person with the youth?
Ooh, man,
ooh,
that's a good question. How come it can't be
you
both,
know,
man?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I know they both have, you know, each of those. But, I mean, who would you rather be on that night? I mean, you know, because it seems to me that Bradley has a little bit more heart, or maybe he's just been tested a little bit more. And, you know, that's just how I'm feeling. Just, you know, how do you guys feel about that?
You know,
go ahead, Dave. I don't know what I'm going to say.
You know, I like exactly what he's saying. You know, who do you want to go with? The youth? But like you said, Devon Alexander showed he had heart, you know what I mean, with his last fight. He struggled. Yes, he did struggle, but he showed heart. A lot of other fighters, guys in his position, would hold it and maybe not have came back out. We've seen it, you know, a la Victor Ortiz. Bradley, a lot of heart, good stamina. But he also shows he's got maturity to adjust, you know. Youth, though, doesn't always win fights. Experience does.
Yeah.
And I like Timothy Bradley in experience in the experience category of being under this type of pressure. Alexander, to me right now, even though he has showed great progress and stuff, this is the big stage for him. I'm not sure about the ticket sales here, but in term-wise of really maneuvering him into a superstar that HBO is looking to do, because I'm looking at it that HBO more or less wants to put more investment on Alexander because of the storyline, what this kid brings down on the board. That's my take there.
Uh-huh.
What do you got, Gabe?
Well, I think there's a lot of interesting things in terms of what HBO is going to do, you know, considering the Showtime deal. You know, they may have some people move, you know, they just had their biggest star move over to Showtime with the whole Manny Pacquiao deal. And you've got Bradley basically in a contract fight where, you know, this is the last fight with Shaw. He's going to be, if he wins, he's going to be a big free agent. So I think there's a lot riding on him. Whereas if Alexander wins, you know, he's with King, he's already kind of set. So he's kind of settled in that. There's not a lot riding on, you know, there's an extra pressure there for Bradley, whether he says it or not, that they're going to handle business after this fight. But, you know, which would you rather be, in a position of power if you've won, or a position of, you know, please sign me, I just lost, you know?
And
he's got a rematch clause on, you know, with HBO, and he's got another fight with HBO. He's pretty set in that regard.
Right.
But in terms of promotional, That's, you know, he's basically like a guy that signed a rookie contract and is now about to go for the big free agent bucks. And so there is that pressure. But if you look at them experience-wise, you know, with the Corley fight at 13 fights, that was big time. That was for a vacant belt, you know, with a regional belt against Corley for Alexander. And when he fought Witter, there's a big difference in how they both fought Witter. Bradley went overseas, fought in front of a huge crowd, hostile territory, and overcame. Whereas, you know, Junior Witter versus Alexander happened at Agua Caliente in front of, you know, not many people. And it was kind of a different thing. Alexander was kind of the favorite coming in. Witter was on the downslide and retired soon after. So there is, you know, that common opponent, but I think it was a better win for Bradley. I think if I had to choose between youth and heart, I guess I would go with the guy that's tested with heart. I don't think necessarily that Alexander's untested. He showed it in the Katonic fight that he's got the will to fight through adversity. But like you said, you know, I'd rather take experience over youth and just banking on youth, because youth can be unpredictable. Youth can come in and drop the ball and kind of freak out and go, I've never been here before. And in some sense, I don't think either guy has really been on this big a stage before. But Alexander's been through some tests, both in life and in the ring, and you got to kind of lean with that.
Absolutely. What do you got, Corey? Who do you got, youth or heart?
I got to go with Bradley. I like them both, don't get me wrong, but I got to go with Bradley. But it's going to be a firefight. It's definitely going to be a firefight.
I think it is going to be definitely a firefight, man, and that's who I'm going for. I'm going with Bradley. I'm going with the guy with the helmet. That's what I'm going for. You know.
All right,
Corey. Hey, brother. Thank you very much, man. Take care.
No problem. You guys have a good night.
You too, man. And if you guys want to call in and talk about who's your pick, you want the guy with the big dome or the man with the tiny voice, call in right now at 347-215-7598. We're talking Alexander versus Bradley, Bradley versus Alexander on HBO Saturday night. We're looking for fireworks early on to really warm us up in this cold weather. You know, I made my pick. Gabe, he said you're leaning a little bit more towards Devon Alexander the Great. Is it going to be great Saturday night? I think there's a lot of people on the East Coast that are hoping that he's going to be great Saturday night, and they're definitely looking into making sure he looks great. And I think it's just going to be an overall a great night, for boxing fans on HBO.
Yeah, I expect it to be. I'm hoping for a really good fight. You know, I think like all big matchups, it's going to be tight early, meaning it's going to be kind of tentative. You know, it's going to take something, a nice big punch, a good exchange to kind of have a fight break out. I think both guys will be looking to be a little bit surgical early on, and then a fight will break out around three or four, and then it'll be on. You know, then it's going to be down to who can stick to the original game plan, make proper adjustments off of it, and pull it out down the stretch. It's more of a gut feeling for me with Alexander that I think he's going to put it all together. Plus, you look at Bradley he made welterweight in his last fight. Now he's dropped back down in weight, and a guy that's full of muscle like he is, you kind of wonder if that's going to have an effect on him late in the fight. If he had to sacrifice anything to come back down in weight, he says he doesn't have trouble making weight, but so does everybody. And so I kind of wonder, if that's going to play any sort of factor in the fight. You know, Alexander seems to be perfectly fine at 140. He's been consistent at that weight. Whereas, Bradley, I just actually had a guy email me that was watching the final press conference, and he feels Bradley looks a little drained. So I think he'd have to kind of sacrifice a little bit more. For me, it's just the intangibles. I like the speed. I like the length of Alexander. I like his skill set a lot. I don't know if he's as versatile as Bradley. I tend to think no. He doesn't invest in the body nearly as much. He doesn't seem to have as much of a zeroed-in plan of attack as Bradley always seems to. But like I said, I like the speed. I like his power. He's kind of the whole package compared to some of the guys that have given trouble to Bradley. There was one fight that Kevin Cunningham pointed out, the Jaime Rangel fight, which some people felt that Bradley might have lost, or was certainly a tougher fight than the scores would say. That's the fight that they looked at a lot. And they looked at the Jimmy Witter fight a lot, actually. Even though that was a winning effort for Bradley, they felt that Witter gave him a lot of trouble in that fight. And it was really only late that Bradley was able to take over. So right now, if I have to make a pick, I'm going Alexander. I'm going to go with the upset special.
Upset special here on Leaving the Ring with Gabriel Montoya. The thing about this fight here, too, is even though, we felt that, hey, 2 years, if you let it simmer up a little bit, the water would start boiling a lot more, and it'd probably be a bigger event among not just – hardcore fight fans, we wanted this fight. This is the fight that we wanted. HBO saw that this is the fight we wanted, and they definitely pushed for it, But in terms of are we not going to get a great fight, I'm going to say yeah. Either it's Saturday or 2 years from now. We're going to get a great fight here. The thing I like about Devon Alexander here is the fact that them watching tape and seeing that you're going to get an overzealous Timothy Bradley at one point out of those 36 minutes. At one point, you're going to get an overconfident Timothy Bradley. At one point, you're going to get a Timothy Bradley that's going to stand and trade a little bit too much and make that mistake that he's even addressed in himself here on Leaving the Ring. And his trainer has said, Timothy, if the day he loses, it's going to be because of his own mistake, because he doesn't sometimes stay completely disciplined and stay to the game plan. And that's where Alexander's got to be patient. He's got to look for it, and he's definitely got to wait for Timothy to want to lead and catch him coming in. I think he can catch Timothy, hurt him coming in, but my thing is, can Devon Alexander finish a guy who's been dropped and been in that position who can control himself after getting up and reestablishing himself, and who has been very quick to regaining his composure and adjusting to another game plan, going from plan A to plan B. It's a very interesting fight. I love this fight. You know, let's patch in some other fight fans who want to talk about Timothy Bradley and Devon Alexander. Mike, you're on the line right now on Leaving the Ring, brother. Who's your pick and what you got? You there, Mike? No. Okay, well, you know what? A good friend of ours here, Donnell Livingston. What's up, brother?
What's going on, brother? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. How you been? Where you been at?
Man, unfortunately, you know, I've been a little sour. You know, ain't nothing changed. Still trying to knock walls down, trying to get a fight. You know, ain't nothing changed. You know, it's a little disappointing, you know, but nevertheless, you know, I'm still grinding.
Still grinding in there, man. Okay, real quick, brother, who's your pick, man? Mr. Timothy Bradley or Devon Alexander the Great?
Well, you know what, man? I came up with both of these guys. You know, I watched their entire boxing career from amateur to the pros, you know, develop. And, you know, I think it's going to be a great fight. But I think there's a wild card in this fight, you know. With Timothy, he's never fought a softball that's slick like Devin, that's as sharp as Devin, and, you know, like a thing like Devin, you know. And depending on how he, you know, handle that situation, how he adjusts to it, you know, yeah, I think it would be either very beneficial to him or it could hurt him. Now, the wild card in favor of Timothy and with Devin, he's never fought the one that's going to be as hungry and as determined as Timmy, you know. And I spoke to Timmy several times before, you know. He's always been accused of using his head and being such and that nature, you know. I spoke to him about that, and he was, you know, he told me, he was like, you know what, Yale? He was like, man, you know, it's not intentional. He was like, I put my head in your chest. He says, and if you just so happen to, you know, be trying to go to the body and my head's in your chest, you're going to get hit, buddy. He said, if you pull out, you're going to get hit with the overhand right. You know, so I think, you know, both of these fighters been undefeated. You know, the hardest thing to go in any sport, any career, is that O. You know, so it's going to be a good fight. I honestly see Tim winning a unanimous decision. I think the first four rounds is going to be explosive. Both fighters are going to be very explosive. And I don't think that mentally that my boy Devin is capable of keeping that pace up. You know, unfortunately, Kontelic, you know, exposed him a little bit, you know, but styles make fights. And, you know, you know, if you based on the last two fights of both of these fighters, Devin, in my opinion, you know, being that that's my boy and being a fighter and being a fan, you know, I think his last fight should have been a draw, and or it could have went either way. But he got the decision. He didn't look too impressed with that fight to me. You know, he did some things that, you know, was able to keep him afloat. Now, on the other hand, with Timmy, his last fight against Luis Abregu, you know, yes, he was a bigger guy, Timothy is not a big knockout puncher. But Timothy caught him with some nice shots that almost made him lean back, you know. So I think it's going to be, a combination of not only the determination factor, you have two well-celebrated fighters, both undefeated. It's like two trains on one track. Whatever one prepared the best, I think is going to come out victorious. It's not just
absolutely
on the fighters. It's not just on the fighters. It's on their camp. You know, whoever have the best game plan. And I guarantee you, in this fight, both of their game plans is going to get derailed quite a bit. But whoever more.
Oh, well, I
got to
agree with you on that one. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and really quick, because, you know, here on Leaving the Ring, we check Facebook, Twitter, we check our Gmail account, you know, the Leaving the Ring at Gmail account. If you want to submit a question or a statement, whatever the case is, and get it said over the air, you definitely can. Gus with Twitter said, I'm just wondering how many aspirins does Timothy Bradley need to take from those headbutts, because he's definitely got to get a headache. I don't know if he's taking aspirin, bro. I'm going to say Vicodins. You know what I'm saying? And Timothy's going to kill me when he sees me, man. He's like, man, I heard them big head jokes there, Ruff. I'm hearing them big old head jokes and stuff. But, you know, Timothy knows he's got a big old dome. He knows he's got a helmet. Hey, done out, man. Thanks real quick, brother, for calling in, man. It's always a pleasure, and I can't wait to find out or see you get back into the ring, man. And you know what? I was trying to render your first fight, and it still just won't load for me, man. I don't know what it is. I don't know why. I have to just try to get somebody else. Maybe I'll get Blue Merc, who just had a baby. So congratulations, Blue Merc, and the whole Concrete Jungle that does our videos. I'll get Blue Merc to work on it. He's kind of a genius when it comes to doing our videos.
You know, sometimes, you know, it may not be on the video. You know, sometimes it just...
I think it's my computer.
And
you know?
Sometimes it's hard for a camera or a TV or something to recognize explosive talent.
There you go, Doug. They're definitely, or beauty. All right, man. You take care, bro.
You too. Good hearing from you, D.
All right, brother.
All right, man. Take care.
Oh,
you know,
man.
You know, a really good sign that anything could happen this weekend is Chris Arreola weighed in under 250 pounds for the first time since 2008 today, weighing in at, 249.5 for his Joey Abel fight. If that's not a single signal that, you know, maybe the apocalypse is coming or that anything could happen this weekend, I don't know what is. Good for him, though, man. A lot of people were, you know, we were joking with Henry saying when he said, oh, he'll be under 250, and, you know, that means 265. And this is one of the first times that Henry, in a while, has predicted to me a weight, and he's been right, you know.
Rightfully so, you know, being up in Houston and there's no yard, you know, to go to have some beer.
Yeah, no,
I think the yard houses and all that have been taken away there from Chris, and maybe all the running away too, not wanting to show up in camp, has kind of shed out the weight there for Chris the Nightmare, you know. But you know, man, I was tweeting a little earlier, and callers, we're going to pick up your calls. There's actually a call. Well, I want to talk about Manny Pacquiao and Bob Arum making a move to Showtime. You know what? I've been getting a lot of email about that, and definitely want to kind of tap into that and speak a little bit on that and our theory here on Leaving the Ring of why the movement and stuff. Me and Gable have had a chance off the air to talk a little bit about it, not a whole lot, but definitely a little bit, and I've spoken to other people and even promoters about that move there. Now, but going back with Chris here, and I put it out there on Twitter, I said, I don't know, Gabe, how you feel, but, you know, he's got his fight. It's his comeback fight. It's on ESPN, his second fight and stuff. But I got to tell you, I'm not really too excited about it. I'm not like before where I was like, okay, I want to see what he's going to do, et cetera, et cetera. I'm more or less really excited about the Josecito Lopez and Mike Dallas Jr. fight. To me, that just seems, even though it's on the underline of the card, you know, it's the co-feature. To me, it's more of the feature fight for that Friday night fight, ESPN. I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think the Joey Abel fight, I think, you know, they're just trying to get Chris's confidence back, get him to be more consistent in camps. Whereas the Josecito Lopez, Mike Dallas Jr. fight is a lot like Bradley Alexander. You know, it's, you got two young guys who are putting it all on the line against each other, you know, against another guy that's like the best at their level. I think it's going to be a really explosive fight. I think Josecito is going to get outboxed early, start to dig to the body, slip inside that jab, and really get close and start to do some serious work. I think he's a little more mature and a little more versatile than his arsenal than Mike Dallas Jr., who's got a great jab, got a nice range game, but the footwork is a little funky. He tends to put his feet a little bit too far apart, kind of loses leverage, loses power, and the jab goes away after a while. He seems to kind of forget it. And Usuzito's a guy that doesn't forget which punches to throw. And so I think he's going to have to walk through fire a little bit, but I like Usuzito by decision in that fight.
I do too. You know, even though you can't count out the young Mike Dallas Jr., who's got a great, fantastic stiff jab when he does use it. But you know, in terms of what you're saying about Josecito, and I was reading your text right now, your game and all that. I had to check everything. Try to be multitask here on leaving in the ring and stuff, you know. Anyways, you know, in terms of what Josecito brings to the table, a volume puncher, a guy that's going to come forward. He's going to work from top to bottom and bottom, top to bottom, from bottom to top. Okay, he's not going to shy away. He's going to be there right in your chest. And Mike Dallas, he has more of that style where he needs moments to think. You know, I don't know if you've noticed that. You know, he needs those seconds. He needs those seconds within the minutes to really kind of figure out what he's going to do and what he's going to establish first. His jab has been there in the past, but for his last two fights, his jab has kind of had to find its way into the fight. You know, where before it was the introduction to the when the bell rang, you know, and that is something he's going to have to really honestly bring to the table on Friday night. He's got to make sure the introduction of the jab is going to be there for Josecito to not allow Josecito to close the gap and land those volumes of shots that he's looking to land. And that's how he's going to control it. But that's not the only thing he's going to have to do to keep Lopez off of him. He's going to have to pick up the volume of punches that he wants to throw and not be so conservative, you know, because that's where Josecito will shine. He'll jump on you. He'll make you not think. And when you got a pressure guy like that, that's going to be on top of you all the time, that's when the thinking game is really due to experience and being calm and collect. You know, and if you don't have that, then you basically got to do what Devon Alexander did, which is go off of instincts, you know. And this is going to really bring out Michael Dallas. We're going to see really what he's made out of on this Friday night fight. I could be wrong, but that's what I'm seeing right now.
Yeah, it's going to be – I don't think he's as mature as Josecito yet. I mean, Josecito's been through some serious wars. He's been tested, particularly as – That Cordova fight, he really had to dig deep, man. He could have lost that fight very easily if he'd just kind of gotten a little quieter in the ring, you know, not thrown as many punches, kind of tried to box a little more. Said he dug right in and went right after the guy and got the job done. It was a tough fight and excellent fight. And I haven't really seen that from Dallas yet. You know, I haven't seen him be completely tested and pushed to the limit and then go, you know what, I've got a little something extra, and let me pull this fight out. That's going to be, if we find out that he has it, this is the fight we're going to find out in, you know. But still, I really like Josecito in this. I think he hits harder. I think he's a little bit stronger. And he just, to me, he's going to own the inside. I don't really see a lot of mid-range or inside game from Mike Dallas. I see a
right.
lot more long. He's comfortable at long range. But when you start to close in on him, that's when he has problems. And that's where Josecito
yep.
lives. Will Josecito be able to do that? That's the thing, because, you know, Dallas is quicker on his feet. He's got a little more length to him, a little more athleticism to him.
Right.
You know, will Josecito be able to really cut the ring off and get him in the corners and along the ropes and do some damage? That's going to be key.
And Mike Dallas is not a small guy either. You know, he's a big boy. His when you talk about length department having a little bit more length in his arms, you definitely got to look at Mike Dallas and say, wow, this guy is pretty long, and that's why that jab has been so effective when he decides to use it as a stick, and that's the if the Mike Dallas we've seen which was really sharpening up his tools when he was going to the wild card, and was kind of, I think, at an ultra peak, you know, having the extra boost of confidence being in there with Manny Pacquiao and whatnot, other fighters out of the wild card. That's the peak. That's the peaking fighter you want to see against Josecito. But if you get the guy that we saw at the Tassie Palace, you know, his last fight, I don't remember the exact date and who he had faced, even though he got him out of there early, but it was more or less, it was not due to Mike Dallas's skills. It was more or less with the lack of skills his opponent brought to the table, you know, and that opponent did not prepare him for a Lopez. Lopez, to me, is prepared for a Mike Dallas, a guy that is going to be there and allow you to close that distance, like you just mentioned right now, you know, Gabe. He's going to allow him to close that distance, and that's something, really, honestly, that's not going to favor his way when he allows Lopez to close that distance and start chopping wood. But what we have seen many, many times in boxing, throughout boxing history, when a guy is put up against the wall, he will fight his way out. Mike Dallas may fight his way out. You know, even though we feel Lopez could be a little stronger, well, we'll find out definitely on Friday night who is the stronger guy and stepping in the ring that night and stuff.
Yeah, because it's not like, you know, I mean, Josecito's got three losses, and one of the more significant ones to me is the loss to Edgar Santana, who could box a little bit. He was a really hot prospect. Had some legal issues, went away, is now trying to make a comeback. But that was a guy that you know, he outboxed, you know, Dallas and really kind of outboxed and out, or not Dallas, but Lopez, and kind of took the fight to him as well. But, you know, he's got, if you look at the last few, I'm not really big on BoxRec, but look at the last few opponents of Lopez, and he's got, like, you know, people like Patrick Lopez on there, who's southpaw cutie, not an easy guy to beat, and he beat him. And most of the guys aren't coming off of, you know, several losses. Whereas the last two opponents were Mike Dallas, you know, they lost, like, all their fights. You know, there's really only Lennard Lane is a great little win that I didn't expect him to pull out. But really surrounding that is guys that were there to lose. I'm not really sure how that builds him towards a fight with Josecito Lopez, other than he's got good people moving him.
Right.
So, yeah, I just think one guy's been through trial by fire. Another guy, he's got Lennard Lane on his – who looked really off that night. He was coming off a good win himself and then looked like crap against Mike Dallas, and it's been kind of quiet since. So I don't know. I think all that evidence just kind of supports Josecito Lopez's win. But, you know, stranger things have happened. Chris Arreola, 49 and a half.
I'm just reading at some of the stuff that listeners like to tweet out and stuff. I don't want to get too deep into that because we've had, I believe, I'm not sure what name here Dave, our producer, was trying to put here, but Kez, is that your name, brother?
Yeah, that's my name. Kevin, Kez, short. Yeah,
okay.
Kev, man.
All right, brother. He put K-E-Z, so I was like, wait a minute, man. I don't know if there's a misprint here and stuff. So what's on your mind, brother? You're on live right now.
I just want to say I love y'all show, man. You know, y'all show is addictive, man. I'm a hardcore boxing fan, and I can listen to y'all all day, you know?
Hey, brother, I appreciate that,
man.
I really appreciate
that. Thank you.
No problem. But, yeah, I just wanted to talk about Pacquiao going to Showtime. And, like, what do you think? Is Showtime taking over, like, the boxing market right now? Because seems like Cotto went over there now, and Lopez. What do you guys think? What's going on with HBO? Are they going to, like?
I think they've been dropping the ball for years. You know, there's, you know, I don't know if you read the Tom Hauser article that was on Seconds Out and Max Boxing. He really breaks it down beautifully how things kind of went down, and it seems to me that Bob Arum felt that HBO was siding with Al Haymon fighters. They were siding with HBO or with Golden Boy, and his fighters were getting frozen out, not really shown the love, not getting prime dates, or they'd say, we don't have that date available. They'd lose the fight date, or they'd move somewhere else, and then all of a sudden somebody else would slip in, and a lesser fight would get his spot. And it was just kind of a long time coming. I think HBO felt like, you know, in some senses they were just too big to fail, and that, you know, they would always be able to, you know, kind of pick and choose with Arum. We don't want this fight over here, but we'll take your gigantic Manny Pacquiao pay-per-view and we'll put that up. And so Bob, you know, did what was best for his company, went over to Showtime, who was partnering with CBS, to kind of get him some, like they call it, you know, terrestrial TV, what we used to call free TV, exposure for his fights and his fighters. And I think people are missing the boat if they look at it and say, oh, well, just, you know, Showtime's just investing in crappy Manny Pacquiao pay-per-views. That's kind of a small-minded view of what's really happening. You know, Manny's on his victory tour. He's going to take fights and he's going to, you know, make him some money, and he's going to do it on pay-per-view while waiting, hopefully, for the Mayweather fight, which will make everybody tons of money. In lieu of that, you know, you're going to get these pay-per-views with, like, with Mosley. But Bob's got a really deep stable. He's got a lot of young talent. He's got, you know, the last days of Cotto, which still can make a lot of money. And he's got Lopez, who's got a long career ahead of him. I think it really is kind of shifted the balance of power. I mean, you look at the pieces that Showtime has, the 118 tournament. Now Bob brings to the table Fernando Montiel and Nonito Donaire, who are not in that tournament, but are very attractive you know, options for the winner of that tournament. You got the Super Six there, and you know, he's not really involved in that, but he's bringing Kelly Pavlik to the table, who's probably moving up to 168 pounds. There's some tentative talk of maybe a Lucien Bouté fight because they've locked him down for three fights. Showtime has put together the pieces of the puzzle that really speak to boxing fans and say these are pieces that are going to make great fights. And HBO is not doing that right now.
Yeah, and I think too a lot of ways too is that Showtime is really watching and listening what's happening in the boxing world. You know, they're taking notice. And you know, the thing too is I had a chance to speak to a couple of promoters about this today. It was one of the deep conversations, and I'll kind of get into other things and what a couple of me and these other promoters were talking about and stuff. But I think Top Rank really felt slated with HBO, starting off with the whole Floyd Mayweather, you know, debacle of negotiations, okay? I think Top Rank and Bob Arum really been disappointed with HBO, and they really felt, hey, you know, they're letting a guy that's a manager kind of dictate what is going on and what these promoters that have been in this game for so many years, you know, do, you know. And I think this was Bob's way of saying, you know what, you feel like you have better product being brought to you by Al Haymon? Well, guess what? Now deal with him only, and I'm taking my fighters somewhere else. I really honestly have to applaud Top Rank for being a big organization and noticing, you know what? I'm not dealing with HBO anymore. I'm going to leave, and I'm going to go somewhere else and take my fighters and my fights. Because now what it does, it really kind of slows down HBO and make them reevaluate what they're doing to the sport and HBO department, not the sport in general in the world, because the health of boxing in the world is perfectly fine. You know, if HBO was to shut down, okay, well, then that only allows other networks to pick up fights and give us the fights we've been yearning and asking for. You know, everybody keeps talking about free TV. We need free, you know, boxing to go back on free TV. Well, shit, you pay cable, don't you? So it ain't for free, you know? We're not getting anything on for free anymore. You know, that whole free thing is gone. It's disappeared. I know they're saying, you know, CBS and all that. Hey, I think we need to start taking away. We're never going to get the world of sports ever again. We need to deal with what we have right now and celebrate it and applaud what we're getting at this moment.
Well, I think, what's that? Go ahead.
No, it looks like HBO might have created a monster with Andre Berto now, because I was hearing something like he didn't want to take the money with the Ortiz fight.
Yeah.
What's going on with that? Was he,
I guess the deal was they wanted more sponsorship money, more gate money. There was a number thrown out. It was like $3 million, and he would, you know, reportedly 1.85 of it. But Lou DiBella clarified that and said, look, you know, really the pot was like $5 million with the gate, with the sponsorship money, with kind of the, you know, the extra things that go around the promotion. The site fee was like $3 million. So he wanted 1.85 of the $5 million, not the $3 million. So he wasn't trying to take all the toys. But yeah, I mean, you've got a guy that his first step up. I mean, they have created a monster. They've paid him so much for so little for so long that now when you ask him to do something substantial, he thinks, well, you're asking me to do more work, I should get more pay. When really he's been being paid for the level of fights that they're asking for now, you know, all this time. It is interesting. I mean, there's some things I'm hearing on that end that I can't get into, But there might be something interesting going on with Berto. We'll see how that shakes out. What I think
they need to get that zap. They need to get that zap to zap him every time he says, you know, who do you guys want to see me fight next? Hey, Kez, I'm going to put you on hold, brother. I appreciate you calling in. I got to patch in our first guest of the show today, okay?
All right, no problem, man. Thanks.
All right,
we'll
brother.
Get more into this subject later, though.
Yeah.
Calling in and bringing it up, man. I appreciate it.
Let's bring in, no doubt, Austin Trout. What's up, brother? How you doing, man? You're on live right now on Leap and Ring.
I'm doing great, man. How y'all doing?
We're doing fantastic here, bro. You know, talking boxing and talking more boxing. And guess what we're going to do now? Talk a little bit more about boxing.
That's right up my alley. So I guess I'm on the right show.
You're on the right show here, brother. So, in New Mexico, you got a fight coming up against Rigoberto Alvarez, who's 26-2 and 19 KOs, and February 5th. And it's going to be in Guadalajara, Mexico, right?
Yes, sir.
Ooh, man, going a long way.
You're from Las Cruces, New Mexico. It won't be much of a change for you.
It's going to be, I've been to Mexico quite a few times. I'm right there at a border city, so it won't be too big of a difference. You know, just the only thing is I'm going to his home state, which can affect, you know, a lot of things.
Now you're challenging. Yeah. You're going in for the vacant WBA World Light Middleweight title. Got a very sensational record, 21-0 with 13 KOs. Let me ask you, right now, in your point of your career, you know, you've been training, getting ready. It was originally supposed to be at the Sergio Leon Chavez Soccer Stadium, but it got moved. When something gets moved, does it make you guys a little wary of what you need to do in game plan-wise? Do you have to throw away game plan and now think, well, we're going to his home spot, I might have to pick it up a little bit more?
Well, since I was fighting him in Mexico anyway, that's kind of the mind state I was in. The only thing that changed was the elevation. So, you know, it helped me out because I'm up here in the mountains of Rio Doso, and that's about 7,000 feet. And Sierra Leone, or wherever it was at, I believe was close to it. Now we're in Guadalajara, which is down about 1,000 feet at 5,500. So, you know, it's going to be to my advantage as far as wind-wise. But as far as the judges and officials go, we supposedly have, you know, neutral judges and officials. So hopefully they don't play a part. But my goal is not to let them dictate whether I win or lose.
Now, do you believe they're going to bring neutral judges?
Well, you know, that's what they promised me. And so, but like I said, I ain't going to let them have a chance to, you know what I mean, jerk me around.
Right, right. What do you do? I mean, do you go down there and you shake their hands and maybe bring them a bottle of wine and some flowers here and say, hey, listen, I'm a real person, man. You know, I worked hard to get to this position. Don't do me. Don't steer me wrong.
Well, you know, I'm going to go to, you know, Guadalajara and be an ambassador of the United States. You know, be an ambassador of God and Jesus Christ and just let them know, show them that I'm a good person and you know, you'll have to deal with God if you jerk me.
Did you have them sew like a bulletproof vest into your robe? You know, you may have to, you know, get that thing back on, you know, if you knock the guy out, you know, just put that.
Yeah, because, you know, I was thinking if, you know, if I beat him up real bad, which I plan on doing, a lot of people are going to be mad. So we might have to fight the whole arena to get home, but you know, I've had some visions in my dreams, you know, and I'm not saying I'm a visionary, but basically God's told me that I'm gonna have to fight the whole city, but I will come out okay.
Right, right. Tell me, what do you know about your opponent here, Rigoberto?
You know, he's strong. You know, he tries to bring a lot of pressure. He's also very wild and makes a lot of mistakes, which I'm going to exploit all night. You know, he has power in both hands, which is, you know, I'm not really worried about, but I am cautious of.
One of the things besides, you know, obviously the opponent and the venue that's going against you is you've been off for a long time. You know, your last fight was November 05. How hard is it going to be? 09, rather, not 05. You fought on the 5th of November, rather. How hard is it going to be to jump right back into a fight of this level, having been off for a year?
Well, I don't think it's going to be too much rust to shake off. You know, I've stayed in the gym throughout you know, the year of inactivity. And the inactivity wasn't due to my part. It was because of the politics and, the, and my mandatory position, which is why we haven't been able to fight. But, you know, I've been to some great camps. You know, I've got to go spar Kelly Pavlik, Tony Margarito, and Sergio Martinez, you know, through the year. And, you know, I felt like I needed to be with these elite champions in the ring, not as much sparring, but definitely fighting. So, you know, I kept my skills fine-tuned in that sense. And, you know, camp's been great. I feel sharp. I feel, you know, good. You know, I'm here in the mountains doing 12 rounds, fairly easy. So, you know, if there's anything to shake off, I shook it off.
What are some of the names that's helped you to get prepared for this fight here? You know, what are some of the names of the sparring partners that's been down there with you?
We've been sparring with Joaquin Zamora. He was rated in top 10, you know, a year ago. We've been sparring with A.B. Hahn. He's an upcoming prospect from El Paso. And another upcoming left-handed, we've been sparring with Arturo Crispin. And, you know, they've all been giving me real good work and helping me out. Also, Rene Armijo, he used to fight for Golden Boy for a while. You know, another southpaw that, you know, we've been helping me get ready.
I'm curious. You know, you've sparred with some really big names and been in some big camps. You don't want to throw anybody under the bus or give away trade secrets, but can you just at least give us an insight into those different camps, like, you know, comparing Margarito to Martinez to Pavlik, and what are they like in camp?
Well, you know, Margarito, he tends to stay to himself and his circle more much. So, you know, personally, I don't know. Yeah, as far as work-wise, you know, they all work hard. You know, Martinez and Margarito more so than Pavlik, I think. But, you know, like, again, I wasn't with Pavlik or Margarito every step of the way for
right.
their camps. Martinez is one hell of a guy. He's a cool, real cool, down-to-earth, humble champion. I would love to be more like him whenever I'm champion.
Yeah, he is a really humble guy. Definitely.
Really cool.
Did you prepare him for, when you were preparing him for Williams?
Paul Williams, yes, sir.
Did you expect that kind of outcome?
You know, I didn't. Whenever he took him out in the second round, the only thing I could say was, he ain't do that to me. But I thought it was going to be, you know, a good one like the last one. And the one thing I said about the first fight, like, if Martinez went to the body more, you know, he might have been able to stop him. And during camp, that's what he was doing. He was attacking the body more. So I knew he would win. But I didn't think it was going to be like that. Ugh.
That was pretty shocking. I was there, and it took me a second to realize, did he just knock him the hell out? Yeah, I think he's a kid. You know, it knocked everybody else in the crowd out for a second. You know, we were all kind of shocked.
You know? It was like a pause. I think all you hear was, and then the cheer comes later.
Not just the pause, but I think he knocked out everybody's buzz. You know what I mean? That were drinking that night. Watch this fight.
Like, wait a minute. It was interesting watching. I've watched the fight a bunch of times, and I found this video on YouTube that a fan took from the stands. And it's HBO has a tendency. Most networks do this. They'll actually turn down the crowd sound, so you can't. On the network, actually hear just how crazy it really is. That was like third row for the thing. And this guy's video, it nails it perfectly because it's not edited at all. And you can literally see him land, and the crowd just goes absolutely wild. Even the cameraman, who's a Paul Williams fan, is just the camera just starts shaking like it's Cloverfield, you know, like Godzilla's running around. It's pretty awesome.
It's looking like Cloverfield. That's funny.
You're going for a world light middleweight title. And at 154, it's a wide-open division. Angulo has been deported. Don't know when he's going to be back. Kirkland's barely working his way back. You know, Paul Williams, unsure where he's going to land in terms of division. Give me your assessment of what you think of the light middleweight division and your place in it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of talent in there, and I'm happy to be a part of one of the, you know, more stacked divisions. I see a lot of guys out there, you know, and they are good, but I'm not impressed, to be honest, as far as I'm concerned. I would love to get any of those names in there. and show the world that I belong to champion. You know, a lot of people, there's going to be a lot of critics whenever I get this belt saying, you know, who is this guy? He ain't fought in a year. He's got this, and that. But they don't understand that I've had no promotional backing until, you know, a few months ago. So it wasn't anybody paying nobody to give me the rankings. You know, I was blessed enough to get in the right fights in front of the right people, you know, some of the WBA officials. And with their judgment and with their, you know, their say, I was in the rankings. So and I'm going to get this belt and I'm going to try to earn, you know, people's respect by using that belt to get some bigger names in the ring.
So what are some of the names that you would like to get in there? I mean, you're saying right now, you know, don't see it as where you would think that it should be at and stuff. Who are some of the names that you think that you right now would match up perfect with?
Well, you know, I'll let Kirkland get a couple of fights. He'll probably get his weight down. But I'd love to take Kirkland out of there. And Gulo, you know, whenever he could get back. But since I'm already going to Mexico, depending on how they treat me, I'll go back to Mexico and fight Angulo.
You know, I don't know if he's you know what though, Austin? I'm not really sure if he's in Mexico. He's been getting a lot of sightings like Bigfoot over here in the United States.
Oh, really?
I just spotted Angulo right now. El Perro's been walking across the street. I'm not really sure if he is in Mexico. We have to find that out, man.
Hey, well, hey, I'll fight him wherever. When I'm world champ, I'm going to be just that, world champ. I'm not going to be that type that stays in the hometown and doesn't fight out of, you know, his country. I want to represent the world. And if I have to go around the world to secure that, you know, that's what I'll do. Also, you know, Miguel Cotto, he's up there at that super champ, whatever status they got him at.
Yeah.
I would love to knock him back down to 47 where he belongs.
That,
I'm curious, too. How do you draw out there? In Las Cruces, you know, it's got a nice fight history. When you do fight close to home, what are the crowds like?
Well, you know, I haven't fought at home very much, maybe about three times, and I say two out of three was sold out. One, the one that wasn't sold out, I blame the promotion. You know, nobody even knew about it. I told people, but, you know, it's funny because, you know, I'm African-American Southpaw from New Mexico, so my demographic isn't great, but they do show love. You know, so, you know, like I said, I tell people, this is God's work because, you know, a person like me and where I'm from is never supposed to be world champ.
Right.
It's kind of crazy too that your division is full of southpaws. You got James Kirkland, Paul Williams, yourself. There's Larry Landa is another guy that's right there. That's really good fight. What's up with all the southpaws? It used to be back in the day. You know, I remember I started training at like 19 years old, and I walked in. Guy said, "Give me your stance." I get in my southpaw stance. He's like, "Oh hell no!" And they switched me around. You know, This was back in 1880, you know, when I was 19. But, you know, it seems like now everything's changed. And people, did you have any trouble being a southpaw? Did they try to switch you, or they were fine with it?
Well, I remember the first day I went to the gym when I was about, like, 10 years old. And for the first week, they made me go right-handed. And then another coach who I guess was out of town came in, and he's like, you know, it just seems awkward, man. What hand do you write with? And I told him left. He was like, turn around. You know what I mean? Just turn around. So they did try. They tried to just automatically put me in right-handed. And thank God for, you know, my coach who put me back to softball.
I remember they made me switch around, and I fought right-handed under that guy, and it was like, I was never comfortable, you know, and I'm ambidextrous. I kind of favor my right, but I can switch both. I golf and bat left-handed and fight left-handed. And I was never comfortable as a right-handed. And to this day, I'm still not. I now fight as a southpaw just because it just feels better.
I drink
know,
left-handed.
You know? Nice.
I can't. Yeah.
you're with Empire now, right, as a promoter?
Yes, sir.
How are things there? You know, it's kind of a newer company. How are things going with them?
I don't know. You know, this is my first fight with them. I'm not going to judge off of this fight because, you know, so much crap has been going on, man. And if I started from the beginning, I'll be talking a lot, and y'all just be busy, and it'll sound like I don't know what I'm talking, like I'm making stuff up. So, you know, well, I'll tell you after the next fight when things go like they should.
Absolutely.
But this fight, you know, it's been just a mess, a big mess, and, you know, I can't blame Empire for it, but, you know, I don't know who to blame. So, yeah, that's kind of part of the frustration, too.
I think that's a lot of things that frustration in the business of boxing here. Hey, you know, Austin, a lot of times, you know, on our chat room, Twitter, whatnot, our listeners, they'll throw out questions. A good friend of ours that's part of Leaving the Ring has been on it numerous times. But one of our listeners is saying, what do you think about Isha Smith? You know, any thoughts about him? Would you want to get in with a guy that it seems like a lot of people have not really been calling them out, and it's kind of puzzling since he's given a lot of people a lot of problems.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll fight anybody who they put in front of me. You know, I guess I was just calling out the bigger names, and I'm not saying Isha Smith is not a big name. He's a bigger name than mine. But, yeah, he definitely helped my career out, and I'd love to fight him as well.
Have you been in the ring before with him? Have you guys sparred before? Or
no, never, never.
Absolutely. All right. Well, brother, yeah, you know what?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would love to get in the ring. You know, and you're looking good against him. That definitely propelled me above the rest of the people he made look bad.
That's true. Very, very true.
Yeah. Nobody ever looks good against him. You know, I mean, he's just that,
he's
that
like
kind of technician.
Emmanuel Gustis, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly right. You know. Yeah.
Yep.
With a better record, but he's actually having his last fight, man. God bless him, man. Emmanuel Augustus, he's like the fight fan's fighter, man. Sad to see him go, but I'm happy to see you back, man. You know, I was excited about you, and then you had the promotional issues and had the time off, but you're an exciting fighter. I wish you all the best, man, and good luck with this fight.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
come
you,
back.
Man. Thank you for having me as well. Anytime, you just let me know.
All right, brother. You take care, man. Wish you luck in Mexico.
All right, thank you. God bless you all.
But there you go. Junior middleweight, Austin, no doubt, Trout, called in and talked to us a little bit. And I got to say, man, I love this personality. You know, he was really open and honest about things that happened to him, what was due to his off, and even now, you know, hey, what's kind of got him in Mexico, well, he's got to, you know, put himself on the line in a hometown fighter, against a hometown fighter in a hometown crowd, and possibly against a hometown three judges, you know, and he's got to muscle his way in, and he's been in with some very credible, more than credible fighters there to help him out to definitely sharpen up the skill level for him to kind of get him through it, you know. So wish him all the luck in the world. Now, if you're calling in at a 111 number, a private number, you're not going to get through. Unblock your number. Call in. I don't even care if Dave talked to you. You're not getting in. Oh, man, let's really quick, let's break down some news. We do have some other stuff to talk about. We do want to recap, though, and go back a little bit about the Showtime movement that Top Rank decided to take on. But I want to talk about James Toney. He's making a comeback February. I don't know what to think or to say about it, brother. You know?
I mean, you know, speaking of guys who won't be making 250 pounds, you know, what can you say? You know, I mean, it's a sad state of affairs.
I thought
so, I mean,
we were really done. You know what's funny is that, I don't know if you thought about this. He's making a comeback, okay? Lights out. And he's going against a heavyweight guy, an IBA heavyweight fighter by the name of Dangerous Damian Reed. What's the name of the guy that is on the Lights Out series? It's Dangerous something? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
The heavyweight.
Lights Leary is his name.
But what's his nickname? No, not Lights Out. Okay, we know Lights Out Leary. But the guy that he supposedly lost to 5 years, you know, back.
Oh, shoot, I don't even know. I haven't been watching.
I think He was dangerous something. You know what? I was going to talk about that. Who's really been Death Row. It's Death Row. Okay, I thought it was dangerous.
Death Row.
I was going to say, isn't that kind of weird? But it's not, you know, so it kind of takes away the whole thing I was going to bring up. But going back with James Lights Out Tony, man, it's just, I just thought we were done with them, and I think we should be done with them. I know some folks were talking about, you know, he's coming back to get a title, maybe to get back in with Holyfield, which could be, yeah, could be somewhat true and stuff, but I just don't really see a whole lot from James. You know, now I think you could really honestly say, Gabriel, ever since doing the UFC stunt, that he's just now more or less around for a paycheck.
He's been around for a paycheck for a while, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's been a while since he's really been a relevant fighter. I mean, you know, even the Haseem Rahman fight, you know, it was not that relevant of a fight. It was kind of two names. You could make some money. People would come see it. But it's been a long time since James has really been a relevant heavyweight, you know, and been a guy that's going to make a move in the division, you know. When was that Rahman? The Rahman fight was 2008,
right?
And that was for a vacant, you know, it was a WBO, like NABO, you know, regional title that like prospects should be getting, not veterans who've held portions of the heavyweight title, you know. So to me, yeah, he's just making some money, and he probably needs it and to pay off, you know, I don't know, cigar debt or something, and you know. It is what it is. It's kind of, there's a lot of things that we need to change in this sport. And I find it very interesting what's going on with Bob Arum, because it's like a shot fired. You know, it's like, all right, we're gonna make this whole other move. And what I was going to say to the caller earlier, just to finish that thought, is what's going to be interesting is what happens if Bradley Alexander isn't a good fight. And Kerry Davis, has, you know, and Ross Greenberg have invested 25% of their budget for the year in two more fights with these guys, a rematch or, you know, another fight for each of them.
You know,
that a head is going to roll on that one. You know, what if it ends in four rounds off a headbutt? You know, what if it's just a crappy fight?
Yeah.
That's going to be very interesting. But speaking of, back to James Toney and just reform, you know, where are the standards? How do you pass a medical if you slur your words? I can't understand what you're saying. What good does it do that you can follow my pen with your eyes? You know, obviously there's a muscle memory, or, you know, there's some sort of motor skill damage going on here, some sort of brain damage. This guy's going to get hurt one of these days, and it doesn't always have to be a heavy puncher. You know, what if David Reed can't get him out of there, but it's a hard 12-round fight, and he takes that kind of pounding? I know James is a defensive guy, but not so much anymore. It's a very dangerous thing to let a guy keep going, and you got to question the commissions here.
Their moral is always been in question. It's something that we're never going to understand. I don't even know if blood runs through the veins of the commissioners at some time. Going back with the whole move for Top Rank here, Gabe, and it's a subject that right now I see the lines are kind of filling up. They want to talk about the HBO losing, Top Rank and stuff. And we got tons, like I said, tons of mail in our Gmail account for Leaving in the Ring about that and what our thoughts are on it. Having and hearing, okay, I was not present, but I have been hearing rumors that the Promoters Association, which is a gang of promoters together and stuff, have, you know, regular meetings, and their main complaint have been about what has been going on in HBO, you know, and Al Heyman involved in HBO, it has raised so many concerns. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I think they're in hopes and belief that, you know, Ross Greenberg and Kerry Davis being replaced would probably help out the situation. How much so? I don't know. You know, I think that exactly what you're saying, Timothy Bradley and Devon Alexander, what if the excitement, the explosions are not there? We get a complete dud. We don't have enough there to really honestly to kind of push them a little bit to keep going. And HBO decides to relieve these two gentlemen from their positions in the sports department. Do HBO stick on to what they have said in the past, saying that they may close the sport department? Or do they get discouraged and want to rehire anybody else to pick up what was damaged and start doing the collateral of it? You know, there's a lot of scenarios about it, you know, and the thing is, it's just not fans that are noticing it. It is a lot of the people that are involved that are noticing the damage that's been happening and the attention that it needs right away.
Well, that's the thing, you know, and it's kind of an off-subject thing. We've talked about, like, you know, bloggers criticizing writers, or particularly myself a few weeks ago. Like, if you knew certain things, why aren't you reporting them? And I think sometimes, like myself, you know, guys that give opinion but also give information. You know, Steve's another one. Tom Hauser's another one that he uses anonymous sources as opposed to always naming people. But, you know, there's a reason why we've been saying the same name, Al Haymon or Kerry Davis, and talking about the same subject. It's not just, you know, three writers kind of going, hey, this guy's doing something crazy. It's a lot of people in the business that are – the relationship is kind of a mystery. Why does Al Haymon have so much run? Why do his fighters make so much more money and have so much more clout at HBO than anybody else? And granted, all of them, to a person, to a promoter or a manager, would love to have Al Haymon's position. They'd love to have the ear of HBO like that. In some cases, you could criticize Bob saying, you know, he wants that kind of relationship, can't get it, and so he's leaving. Maybe I just say he's doing the best thing for his company, and I think the sport as a whole will actually benefit from it. You know, he's the first promoter that's said we should probably get back closer to free TV on some level, even if it's just a replay, and then actually gone and done it. And we'll see if he's successful. You know, it could go the other way. I mean, you know, like Steve Kim brought this up. I won't steal his point, but I think it's an important one. When Showtime landed Mike Tyson in the twilight of his career, there was no quality control. They kind of just bought whatever fights he was going to bring to the table, and those were not good fights, and they were paying out huge sums of money for that deal. Hopefully they learned their lesson, and that this time around they're going to be, you know, paying, going by their philosophy of buying good fights, not fighters.
Right.
You know, Bob's still going to do shows on HBO. He's got two shows later on this year on HBO. That's still going to happen. I mean, it's really a lot of it is just taking Manny Pacquiao over there, trying that model out.
And you know what, too? The thing, too, Gabe, is what I'm thinking here is, and I'm going to patch in some fans right now, so just stay on hold for a minute. I'm just going to make my point. I'm going to make it real fast, and then I'll patch in some listeners that want to talk about this subject here, is that I was pointing out, too, is that having the move from Top Rank, and again, I got to applaud them for doing this, you know. This was, you know, really, there was a lot of reasonings behind it. More or less, we're going to have to have assumptions about them, but, I think we could kind of narrow them down, this is assumptions, to a few, okay? But I'm also thinking that it gives opportunities for smaller promotional companies to maybe play in getting fighters that we normally wouldn't be able to see on HBO because of the monopoly of the bigger promotional companies having with HBO. Now we get to see some of this talent that we have not been able to see. Not like ourselves, hardcore boxing fans that need to feed the need, but the casual fans, you know, where that's how boxing has always been kept afloat, is by establishing new stars, establishing new faces, giving some extra push and oomph, and giving some extra faith to these smaller promotional companies that need that X amount of money to keep them, to keep functioning, you know? So in a lot of ways, Top Rank relieved themselves from headache that they were having, and really felt they were being kind of slated, like I said, and not given the attention that they were asking for, you know, being around for so long and being that they're a big company. But in some ways, they're giving HBO to really have an intervention with themselves and to see what they're doing. You know, I don't think there is no way we're going to be able to completely fix boxing. I think this word save boxing is just so overrated. We're not saving boxing. There's nothing we can do to save boxing, but we can have an intervention with boxing. And I think that's what's basically coming down into 2011.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Bob, you know, if you really look at the way he did business over the last few years, Pinoy Powers and Latin Furies, he was basically going, you know, like a lot of other promoters, looking for that HBO date because it's the premier network. It's the gold standard. The production value looks better. You know, I've had people actually ask me about that. You know, don't you think the production value is not going to be as good? To me, I don't really care. You know, it could be in the middle of the woods. You know, as long as the fight's good and fight fans can get to it, I'm happy. But you really, you know, look what he was doing. It was just either he was going with HBO or he would just take it to his own pay-per-view. And he was putting his own money on the line. That's what a promoter does. He invests in different venues.
He was putting his own money against the 24/7. Remember that? It was ridiculous.
Yeah. most of the promoters have to pay for that. I think
NASCAR did it.
Jimmy Johnson might have been one of the only people that came in and had them had HBO actually pay for his 24/7. But the promoters generally pay for that tool. That's why I don't put any stock in it. You know, it's a reality show paid for by a promoter. They're not going to show you things. I mean, I've heard rumors of one particular fighter on there. I won't out him, but he choreographed his sparring sessions and was spent more, you know, time doing that than just about anything else. I've actually seen them do cutaway shots of, and this one I will give away because it's not really that big of a deal, but it just kind of shows you how fake that show is. I'm in the wild card one day, and 24/7's there, and they're waiting for Manny, and they go, well, we'll get some pickup shots. And so Freddie and Ariza go up on the ring apron, and they look over the ropes like they're watching somebody spar, and the third guy, part of their team, is in the ring moving around doing his best Manny, and the camera's just filming Ariza and Freddie.
Wow.
And so those cutaway scenes where you're seeing, you know, Manny sparring or Manny doing something in the ring, and they cut away and you show Freddie and like Ariza or whoever on the ring ropes, that must be like two separate times. That's not the same session.
Yeah.
You know, just letting you know, it's like...
Yeah, no, you know what's funny? I was at when he was getting in with Oscar De La Hoya, their 24/7, I was at one of the workouts. It was not a media workout, but, you know, 24/7 crew was there, and they made it seem like that sparring session was media day. It wasn't. It was a closed doors, and Freddie Roach had asked. I was there interviewing him, and he said, hey, do you want to stick around? I said, yeah, I want to stick around. You know, he said, do you want to see Amir Khan and Manny spar? I said, yeah, definitely, you know. And that was cut in as if it was on media day, and it wasn't, you know. I mean, they have to find – it's basically almost like a cut film. You know what I mean? They're going to cut the best parts and edit it down. That's what it is and stuff. And fake in terms of how they kind of line it up in timeline, I agree with you, and other stuff.
It's not raw reporting. I mean, it's not like you're crafting a story and you have a guy walk in a room 15 times, and I've seen that. It's not reporting. You know, you're just making a show. And so a lot of people make the last few 24/7s, I think I went back and watched Margarito Pacquiao like leading up to the fight after I was done writing everything I was going to write. And it was interesting seeing that storyline, you know, the way everything played out, the way that everybody talked about Margarito's in the shape of his life, Pacquiao's having a crappy camp. And it was just, that was what they fed us like the whole time, all the quotes. They just kind of gave us a point of view. You know, I happened to buy it. You know, I'm not immune to hype. I didn't even watch 24/7, and I still got that storyline out of it. But I found it interesting. It's just the way they kind of force feed things. And, you know, look at all of them. Each one has their own kind of little story points. Mike Conn's was the one for the last camp, you know.
Right,
It's not so reality TV.
No, definitely. Let me patch in some fight fans here. I believe we have Chip. He's been on hold for some minute. What's up, brother? What's on your mind? You're on live right now. Leave it in the ring.
Hey, Dave and Gabe. And by the way, I'm a first-time caller. And let me just say that you guys have the best show opening in the world. I just wish y'all could just let that music play for like the first 30 minutes of the show.
Thank you, man.
I'm telling you. My car starts vibrating and everything. And Gabe, man, you've just blown it for me, dude. I'm all into 24/7, and now you're telling me there's no Santa Claus. Come on, man.
I'm sorry, man.
Hey, Chip, now you know why you ain't got a girlfriend, man. You know, Gabe is just straight up, no curves or none. He's just straight to the point. She says, how do I look in this dress? terrible. You know, that the scene there, just the shoes are not matching the dress, you know?
I don't know. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to kick it. I mean, you know, I'm going to be straight with you. I can't lie to you.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
that,
you
I
know,
it was the funniest thing in the world, watching the guy do his many impersonation. I was like, this is his big moment, and nobody's filming him. This is awesome. They're filming people watching him.
Man, well, thanks a lot, bro.
Sorry.
You know, Showtime, with them doing the Manny and Mosley fight, what's really interesting is that had HBO picked this up, we would not be seeing it on CBS. And, you know, most of us are going along with the fact that, hey, you know, Manny's probably going to, you know, dominate Mosley. But I'm really interested to see if the interest that this fight picks up because it's being shown on CBS, no matter how the fight turns out, will this attract another network, or will we see it again later on this year, another fight being exposed to the general, I mean, to the general public on public TV? What do you think?
Probably, you know, it depends on how this one goes, I imagine. I mean, it kind of makes me a little scared, the whole CBS connection, because remember, they bought Kimbo Slice. And granted, Manny's a legitimate fighter. He's not Kimbo Slice. But
right.
There was this big moment, and here they are on TV, and he gets beat. What happens if Mosley beats Manny? What if it's a terrible fight? And that's my problem, is that if it's going to go to free TV, we're not actually putting our best product out there. Bradley Alexander is not on CBS.
CBS, right.
It's a mismatch. That's kind of my problem, is that when we get on the biggest stage, it's never our best stuff. It's De La Hoya Mayweather, or, you know, sadly, Trinidad De La Hoya, which was a bad fight. You know, that's kind of my problem with the thing. But I think it's very possible for us to – I think even if we get on CBS with this fight, it's going to be a replay. You know, best case scenario, it's going to be 3 weeks after. You know, it'll be the pay-per-view, it'll be on Showtime as a replay free, and then CBS.
You know –
So I don't know how much of an impact it's even really going to have, much less if it's going to happen again.
You know, the thing I like about this here, Chip, is it goes on CBS, and just let's just say we more or less got to say it's going to be somewhat competitive. It brings a lot of interest, not just to the casual fans, but it has to kind of spark up our interest as our core fans itself. But let's say it does well, it could start a ripple. ESPN, which HBO has said, when he had Steve Kim on the show, and he said HBO has more fear what ESPN can do because they're in more homes, they're able to reach more domestic homes than anybody else. You know, HBO is a paid product. You have to subscribe to them in order to view their programs, okay? So being that it's on CBS, let's say that the overall is the outcome is fantastic. That only ups the budget for ESPN. I don't know whether or not it'll make other networks pick up on it, because I think it's not going to just take one fight. It's going to take a numerous amount of fights to have other networks go, I think they got something here, because of the fact that for some reason networks have been so darkened by boxing, and not just the sport, not the sport of boxing, but by the people that have been involved in boxing, that's really scared them away. But the networks that have hold of boxing and may make them pick up and say, we have to pick up our game, we have to get more sponsors, we have to get more advertisement and put more budget and push it to compete with CBS and Top Rank, what they're going to be bringing to the table, if
right.
It's successful.
That'd be a hell of a move.
Yeah.
This HBO and ESPN kind of hooking up together, because, I mean, if you really think about it, ESPN's actually already loaded and ready to go to deliver boxing. You know, they've got a brand in Dan
Raphael. I don't know.
Raphael.
I'm not saying they will hook up. No, Gabe, I wasn't saying they will hook up. I would say
I'm just throwing out that idea, you know, that it would
right.
be better for the sport if ESPN actually did feed HBO or feed Showtime a little bit more directly than they do, so that it all kind of worked together. You know, I'm not really into monopoly, but it just seems that to me flow is the biggest problem in boxing. There isn't one. You know, it all kind of happens in this disjointed, you know, this guy jumps in the rankings and suddenly he's getting a belt, or this guy doesn't get his title shot, like, you know, or an Humberto Soto who's been chasing a big name and picking up vacant belts his whole career. Now there's no direct flow from, you know, ESPN to to he moves into this level, to HBO or to Showtime, and there's already stars that have been developed on that level there, ready for them to fight, not dancing around with other promoters, you know, kind of on a tangent. But it just seems like it should flow better. It should feed each other better. And
yeah.
I think with CBS, I'm not sure if we're actually going to see that. I think we're just going to see it's a different platform. I kind of wonder what the numbers would have done on HBO with Pacquiao Mosley. I don't think they would have done as well. I think that audience is educated enough, the casual fan, to know this isn't going to be a good fight. Bob's kind of just gone to a different pasture of suckers and heading over to Showtime and to CBS and figure maybe I can pick up a few hundred extra thousand suckers to buy this freaking thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
guys, as we get closer to that fight, I really want to encourage you guys to maybe get, you know, Thomas Hauser would be really great on the show, or if you
yeah.
guys ever get any of these, you know, executives, even from
we've
ESPN.
Tried.
Oh, really?
Yes. Listen, we look, let me tell you this. We have made numerous calls. Showtime right now, they have show interest in being on Leaving the Ring. Okay, I just can't give you any names and stuff like that because I don't want to ruin the chances of getting them on. Same thing with HBO. We have reached out to them. A lot of listeners have asked us, hey, can you guys get these guys on? Trust me, we are trying. You know, it just takes time. Unfortunately, it always takes time to bring certain guests on. They need to become comfortable and understand we're not going to sever your head. We're just going to cut your neck a little bit.
I'll work on Hauser, though, man. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I can get in touch with him. And I was actually thinking that earlier in the show tonight as we were talking about this. Like, why didn't I call him and get him on this week? I don't know.
You've been sick. You've been sleeping all day.
Yeah. I need an assistant.
Okay, guys. Well, thanks. And Dave, I think I speak for all of us out there listening. It's nice to hear you not underwater this week.
Hey. You know, Listerine, man. In order to keep your teeth healthy, you got to gargle at all times. And sometimes it's got to be on the show.
All right, real quick. Chip, did you ask me about the round card girls? Is that you that emailed me?
Yeah. About
okay.
showing those
checking.
Round card girls, yeah.
Yeah, it's a major point of contention. I really think, you know, that's my platform, so.
There you go.
I'm glad you appreciated it. All right, man. You take
Thanks
care.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
You know, let's talk about a little bit of something that was dropped on Leave It in the Ring. It was reported. We were contacted by somebody very close to Kasim Uma, junior middleweight fighter at one time that was signed with Golden Boy, a very taunt prospect. And we were told and informed that there's a possible showdown with Danny Jacobs, the Golden Child from Golden Boy, in Anaheim, March 5th, which would be on the Canelo card, and Matthew Hatton and James Kirtland would be on that card as well. Kasim Uma is up Miami, Florida at the moment. He's getting in some sparring. There was talk of him getting in not on the Golden Boy card, but possibly with main events on ESPN against Joel Julio. They decided to go with Antoine Smith rather than getting in with Kasim Uma. And I had a chance to speak to Terry Lane. That to find out if there was some truth, you know, because there was really no other resource to go to, you know, just to hear what the camp had to say and what they thought. There was supposed to be some signing in the morning. And I spoke to Terry, and he said, look, it's I'm not going to say it's a done deal, but it looks more or less that it's leaning towards that way. Didn't want to, let that out because it was not completely finalized, but he has the Let's Get It On promotions were contacted by Golden Boy, and they seem to be gathering a good relationship. I mean, Brandon Flawless Gonzalez, who was just recently had debuted on Solo Boxeo over there in Fairfield on the Don Targan, had some success, okay, packing the house and stuff. So the relationship there is getting together, you know, and Lane was able to tell me that they have a fourth deal with Solo Boxeo in Reno, Nevada. So they're building a relationship, and definitely looks promising. Now, but whether it's going to be Danny Jacobs, he says maybe 50-50, but we're not going to put all our chips in the bag right now. But you guys didn't report it wrong. There is talk, but there's not a definite yes. He's going to let us know. He's going to give us a call back here on Leave It in the Ring and let us know a little bit about whether or not it's gonna go through and stuff. Going back with Brandon Gonzalez, it looks like he may be getting on a Star Boxing ESPN card on Friday night in March, in a mid-March date. The date is not solid, and the venue is not solid and stuff, but we are hopefully in hopes of seeing Brandon Fallas Gonzalez, the middleweight contender, four times. He's got four dates scheduled with the Lane brothers, okay? So that's our update of what we had put out on Leave It in the Ring, just to let some folks know, because they were emailing us about it and wanted a little bit more information. And I'm passing it on. Definitely passing it on to you guys and stuff, you know. What can I say? You know, Vitaly Klitschko and Orlando Solis looks pretty much on its way. Had their first press conference. It's, for March 19th, the showdown. You know, we start off after November. It really just December. But it really kind of slowed down. And the beginning of January, man, just really, really slowed down. I mean, there was really nothing, a whole lot to talk about. I think we were pulling teeth, Gabe, for the last couple of shows to have something to kind of chew on and stuff. But now it looks like it's starting to pick up gear. Okay, we talk about the heavyweight division. I know a lot of people here in the States are saying, well, it's kind of shallow, blah, 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 blah. But the Klitschko, both brothers, seem to have good fights coming up. Orlando Solis, who's a Cuban fighter, is going to be stepping in now. Is it a little rush for him? Of course. And Thomas Adamek, who's been showing tremendous progression in the heavyweight division, especially upsetting Chris, who's going to be fighting this Friday night, he shows... And some people are kind of swaying that he can pull it off here, Gabe. I haven't been able to kind of soak into it, but I do like the fight. I think this is a very interesting fight. I don't know. I'd like to hear your take about it.
It's kind of the same thing. I haven't really quite soaked it in. I'm not really giving Adamek much of a chance to win. I think that Vlad, he's a guy that you kind of leave him alone, he'll leave you alone. And I think Adamek won't leave him alone, and it's going to bring something out in Vlad. You know, I think he's going to be more aggressive in that fight than we've seen him. Because, I think Adamek's got a lot of flaws, but obviously he's a very good fighter. He's been able to go from light heavyweight, cruiserweight, heavyweight, and be successful. But the guys he's been fighting, are kind of, Vinny Mandalone and Michael Grant. You know, Michael Grant that was actually a tough fight. It was a really good Michael Grant, I thought. You know, as good a Michael Grant as you can get. But he's also beaten, Areola, who was kind of undertrained but still a very dangerous guy. But I still, I don't think... his problems are he's still wide open. He still gets hit. He got hit by Michael Grant. I think Vlad's jab is going to control him from the outside. He's going to be a little more aggressive in his output. I don't think he's going to be careless and get caught. And I think it'll be a late round stoppage. And if he pulls out, then we get Vitaly versus Adamek, which would be interesting. I think it's a much harder fight to watch. I think again it's kind of jab right hand, but Vitaly is very efficient and he's very accurate, but I think he'll have some trouble with Adamek, and that's a more winnable fight to me for Adamek, because you can kind of hunt and peck from the outside, move in and out, and I think that movement would give Vitaly a lot of trouble. I still like Vitaly to beat Solis, because he's just generally fat and kind of not very mobile. He's like a Sam Peter 2.0 without the power. I don't know. He's a little more defensive-minded. He's going to be not an easy target for Vitaly, but there's something about – he's more like elusive in his upper body. He's not elusive to me with his feet. And I think Vitaly can take advantage of that and zero in as the fight goes on. But I'm not terribly on fire about either of those fights,
I hear – you're saying, and going with Adamek here is that what you? I'll go back and kind of just relate what you were talking about. About the whole Grant and you know, Oriella. The thing is, those two fighters there did not prepare him to get in class with, you know, Vladimir. You know, when you talk about class, it's just going to be, you're going to be fighting a far more bigger, but not big and strong. Not just that, but a far more more intelligent heavyweight. You know, like it or not, this guy is by far the best heavyweight we have. And he would, if both the brothers would give anybody in any era at the moment a run for their money, or even possibly still be champion, you know, in some eras of the heavyweight division. It's something to be argued with, you know. I hate to really honestly compare past fighters to present fighters. It's almost a dead end talk, you know. It's gonna go in circles and stuff. But you know, what Kathy Duva has done for Adam Mick is really built a following to build this fight here. And I think, you know what, the payoff is exactly what they've been looking for main events. And this is the best you're going to get, Tom, you know, Thomas Adam Mick. I don't think you're going to get any better. You know what I mean? He's going to have his flaws. He's just a smaller heavyweight, you know, but he's a strong, durable heavyweight. And I think he's going to have a determination. I don't think we're going to see him more or less fall apart when we've seen like Eddie Chambers and stuff, you know. I think we're going to have a much more strong-minded Polish fighter that's going to go in there looking to win, not looking to survive. And I think that's what I like about this fight. You know, the thing about the heavyweights is it's always a punch away to change something. And I definitely like that. But let's talk about some exciting lower weight fighters. You know, Gamboa Solis, I'm talking about, you know, like I was mentioning, it started off slow. Now it's starting to pick up February and March, you know, and really in March, you got a lot of fights that are just packed. They're going to be at the Boardwalk Hall. You got Gamboa, your rookie Gamboa versus, you know, oh, man, I just, I'm sorry. I'm going to be talking too fast here, Gary, but I'm actually losing my voice, I think, right now, brother. You know?
What the hell?
I know. Jorge Solis.
We're like an hour and 40 minutes in.
Jorge Solis out of Mexico. They're going to be stepping in, and Mikey Garcia, you know, who was the prospect of the year here on Leaving the Ring, is going to be on his way on that card there. So you got a lot of good fights here, man. It's going to be televised on HBO and After Dark, the Featherweight Fury, and it is promoted by Top Rank. That fight there was already scheduled with HBO, so there's no way out of that one, you know. And
yeah,
you know, it's just, it's not going to happen, you know. And man, I'm sorry, something got in my throat here, bro.
Yeah, what the hell? You're like the president or something.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, like Clinton always seemed to be losing his voice. You know, like he continually had like scratchy voice for like 8 years. Anyways, go on.
Oh man, oh man! You got Julio Cesar Chavez. Do we really want to talk about Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. here, or do we want to talk about Chris Martin in training at the Top Rank gym in Las Vegas? Which one do you want to pick? You know,
we can go Chavez Jr. Just get it out of the way. You know,
I tell you what. What about Fernando Vargas? He's talking about making a comeback. 3-time world champion, ferocious Fernando Vargas. He has announced he's launching the Vargas Entertainment Promotions, and he's promising to bring some of the top boxers in the nation. 33 years old, is rumored to even give it a kickstart the way Oscar De La Hoya did for his promotional company, Golden Boy, to get back into the ring to help out his company. El Ferocious is going to be, he's in Las Vegas. He's getting his star on the Las Vegas Walk of Fame tomorrow at a press conference at the Palms Casino Resort. You know, I got mixed feelings about this. You know, I like Fernando a lot. Was a big fan. I thought he brought us some great fights. I understand why he's going to do it, try to make a comeback if he does decide to do it. You know, he's been running. He's been, you know, getting himself in the condition. I just don't know exactly what good a condition can he be in. He's had back problems in the past. There's always been something there that's kind of held him back from making weight. What is weight does he come into? What weight is he going to look good at? And how much money do you think he's going to be able to generate for his company? You know what I mean? I mean, of course you're going to have the ferocious entourage, the little ferocious, he used to call them, come out. But how serious do you think the boxing world is going to take him, Gabriel?
I just don't think he should fight. You know, I think he's a great guy for the sport. You know, he's an ambassador for the sport. It's actually one of my favorite people. Like I don't know him. You know, I've seen him. I've interviewed him one time. You know, he was kind of before my time as a writer. I interviewed him for the Mayorga fight, and just like met him one other time. And he's just a, you know, he's a great guy. You know, and really I think it's a positive for the sport in a sense that, you know, everywhere he goes, you know, I imagine people would get excited to watch boxing just by talking to him about it.
Right.
But I don't think he should fight. I think just looking at his last few fights, even if he's down in weight and does it the right way and is really dedicated, the reflexes look bad. You know, the legs look bad.
Whoa, God, yeah.
Everything, the balance is kind of, you know, it's just gone. There's just no two ways about it. And for whatever reason, you know, he started so young and was his prodigy, but he burned out really fast. And that's just the sad reality. And I'm sure, you know, he's 33 years old, and that's old in fighter years, but he's a young dude, you know, and he's probably got that fire burning in him. He wants to do something. He's a competitor all his life, and it got cut short. It's really unfortunate, but that's just the reality of it, is that he shouldn't be fighting. It'd be really interesting to see who gives him a license to fight and what they base that on. You know, because if you look at the last few fights, I don't think he's shown that he should be boxing right now. I mean, no disrespect to the guy, but it's just, if I've got to be honest, you know, that's just how I feel about it. And I wonder what kind of boost that really is going to give his card. I think his people will come out. I think his fans will come and see him every time he fights. But at the same time, you know, I mean, is that going to get him on HBO with it, or is it going to get him, or is it just kind of building for a local card? I mean, there's other ways to do it. I think him just being there and promoting it with his personality, he could probably do just as well. But that's just me, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't think there's really a whole lot to be said there about that. You know, we definitely do support and wish the best for his company, you know, the VAP, is right, VEP. Promotions and stuff and what he plans on doing and pushing it. I wish you the best there, but health-wise, you're absolutely right. He has no business getting back into the ring. I mean, if you hear him talk now, it's terrible and stuff, and he did not look good at all. You know, he was a step three behind when getting in with Ricardo Mayorga and stuff. Some sad news in Jeff Lacey's family here. His older brother was gunned down after killing two police officers that were on duty. Really, honestly, I haven't got a whole lot of news about what happened. Lacey has made a statement, you know, pretty much just saying he didn't have a real any type of contact with his brother, and he said, I don't even think I was have been able to prevent what happened with his brother. It's a sad thing to hear, you know, and what happened and stuff. You know, Lacey's just got to keep trucking and continuing what he's doing and stuff, you know, and it happened in St. Petersburg in Florida, you know, and the community is really kind of torn up about the shootout. And you have to imagine how Jeff Lacey, his brother Hydro Lacey, obviously there was something wrong with him, you know, mentally. He was, you know, he maybe needed some help. He was charged in 2009 for a domestic violence charge. And our hearts and our prayers are out for the police officers that were on duty and lost their lives to an unfortunate thing that happened with Jeff Lacey's brother. You know, what more can we say about that?
just sad, you know. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, you know, Morales and Marquez, huh? I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, no, go ahead. Actually, this is, this is an oddity of a fight.
You know, there's talks about it, it's on, there's talks about it, that it's off. It's on, off, on, out of no, it's unofficially. I heard there's not going to be a title on the line if Eric Morales and Juan Marquez step into the ring, you know, and they're talking about April 9th in Las Vegas. I have heard, but it's not official yet, okay? I'm quoting it. It's not official here yet, but there are rumors of Robert the Ghost Guerrero possibly stepping in with Michael Casitas, you know, on the undercard. Whether or not it's to build up maybe a possibly showdown with the winner of the Marquez-Morales fight, I highly doubt it. But, you know, Golden Boy has been moving Guerrero. I know there's still perplexed by fight fans, and even myself, you know, I wanted to see Marquez and Guerrero, but there is no complaint in the pace that they've been moving Guerrero. I think they have been true in how they've been moving him. He fought, I believe, what, 4 or 5 times just last year, here, Gabe, or maybe even 6.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So he has been consistent. It's not like they've been putting him on a shelf, and it's not like they've been ignoring him. They have been doing, they've been holding up to their word of making sure that he is staying very active in the ring. Now, whether or not that card is going to get put together, we hope so, but we all know how that goes. You know what I mean? The card sounds good, but it's going to fall apart, you know. Obviously, the Morales, that little piece there is probably what some fight fans are not going to be too intrigued. Eric at the Lee Morales does bring a lot of fans, you know, from Mexico. They're going to come down. But you more or less got to sit there and say, what more is left for him to really kind of bring? This is more weighing on his part of what Morales we're going to get. Is there one great fight left in him? Both men have stated they want Manny Pacquiao. Both men are gearing to fight Manny Pacquiao. So both men feel if they fight each other, the winner should have rightfully so the right to step in with Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, I mean, the answer to the question, does he have one more left in him? No. You know, I don't think so. You know, I think that, you know, Marquez is showing his age, but Morales is showing it more. And I think just from a style point of view, a boxer is always going to give trouble to Eric Morales. And Marquez is showing he's very much a fighter now, but, you know, at his core, he's a brilliant counterpunching boxer. I think he's, you know, I think the fight is going to happen. I think he does beat Morales. And it sets up the third Pacquiao fight. I just think that's how it's going to go. I mean, Floyd's case got pushed back to like March, so that it's going back even further. You know, Manny's fighting in May. I don't foresee Floyd being available to make a fight. I could be wrong, but you know, to me, the logical next fight probably in the summer or like September for like you know Mexican Independence Day or the old Oscar date of September 18th, I see Pacquiao taking on Marquez in the third fight. It just seems logical to me.
Yeah, it definitely does seem logical, but now with the movement of, you know, Bob Arum with the Top Rank here going to Showtime and Marquez and Golden Boy having a great and very tight-knit relationship with HBO, kind of leaves questions and stuff because we've seen it time and time before. HBO and Showtime only... I believe it was the only time they reunited. I can't remember, think of another time, but it was for Mike Tyson and Lennox Lewis, you know? Would it be a big enough fight for them, but both networks to share profit? Not really sure about that. You know what I mean? It's more of a fan fight that we want to see than a casual fight the world would want to see and stuff, you know? I think Marquez really, if he, maybe he may get that fight. I'm not sure. As this part right now, Gabe, I'm just thinking it's never going to happen. You know what I mean? I just don't see it happening. This could probably be possibly a way of Top Rank trying to muscle HBO of allowing Heyman and Floyd to dictate what the negotiations are on the table and make them say, hey, listen, either you take this fight, blah, 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 to the Mayweather camp for the future, maybe 2012 or 2013. I don't know. But I just can't see the Marquez thing happening and stuff. I think eventually what's going to happen, we're going to end up seeing Marquez fight another Golden Boy fighter and possibly be Robert the Ghost Guerrero. The passing of the torch.
Yeah, it's very possible. I just think that...
which is another great fight, too. That's another great fight there in the making. You know what I mean? I like that fight
also,
a whole lot.
He's got a tough fight in front of him, although I kind of expect him to win it, is, you know, possibly against Michael Katsidis.
Right.
So, you know, I think that might be on that card. So there's a lot up in the air, and Bob Arum has been very, very clear, you know, about a Marquez fight. He's going to have to ask for less money. And Golden Boy can't be, you know, the promoter. Those are two very tall orders. And now that he's on Showtime, you're absolutely right. It actually throws up another barrier, you know, that right there, you know, having just those two networks at odds is going to be interesting to see what kind of fights can be made or if we're just going to get more in-house fights. You know, luckily Bob's got a nice stable, but he's running out of guys to face against Manny Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao, definitely.
That's why, you know, and Marquez doesn't have anybody that can bring him the kind of money that Manny brings. So they're going to have to meet in the middle. To me, why I say it's logical is just where else do they go after this? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's something brewing, like I said, you know, it's too early for me to talk about it, but barring that, to me, that development won't even happen for another couple fights. Who's Manny going to take on? If they're saying he's going to fight six more times in the next 3 years, who are those people?
Well, whoever those people are, obviously Timothy Bradley and Devon Alexander have an exclusive contract with HBO. You know, Sergio Martinez is another guy who doesn't have an exclusive contract with HBO, but you know, it's never going to happen. That fight is just never going to happen. You know what I mean? And it just kind of leaves, really honestly, there is no leverage between both of these promoters when it comes to making the negotiations. They're going to have to meet on neutral ground. It's just going to happen here, you know. But, hey, Gabe, real quick, do you have the fight schedule up, or do we need to have some time there for you to pull it up?
No, actually, I do have it up.
Go right ahead, brother.
I have a million tabs up, but it is somewhere. Here it is. All right, let's start on Friday. This is actually a jam-packed weekend. At the Pechanga Casino in Temecula, California, ESPN2's Friday Night Fights, Chris Arreola takes on Joey Abel, 29-2 versus 27-4. In support of that is Mike Dallas Jr., 17-0-1 versus Josecito Lopez, 28-3. Underneath that, John Molina Jr. Returns to the ring as well. And Sean Estrada also rounds out that card. At the Four Points Sheraton Hotel in San Diego, California, on Televatura, we have Charles Huerta, 16-1 versus Raul Harares, 11-0-1. Underneath that, Gary Russell, or Mr. Gary Russell, and Anthony Salcido. I really like Gary Russell, man. That guy is born to fight, and it's really an exciting guy to see. David Diaz makes his return to the ring at the UIC Pavilion in Chicago against Robert Frankel. And then let's just jump to Saturday night. They're actually at the Yonkers Armory in Yonkers, New York. Boxing 360 is putting on. There's a guy on this card that, Ronson Frank is the main event, and that's kind of a local attraction. But this guy, Lennox Allen, I met him in St. Lucia years ago, like 3 years ago. And he was a super middleweight, or rather a junior middleweight at the time. He's moved up to 168 pounds now. He's a rangy southpaw, 13-0 from Guyana. Interesting fighter. Hopefully, good things will happen for him in the coming year because I really like him. I think he's more of a middleweight. I think he can shave down, but interesting fighter, rangy guy, has a lot of pop, and has a lot of heart. His last fight is actually on the internet, and check him out. Lennox Allen is his name. Then jumping to Saturday at the Silverdome, Pontiac, Michigan. HBO, Timothy Bradley, 26-0 versus Devon Alexander, 21-0. This is a side who is the best in the world at 140, not named Amir Khan. Underneath that, Vernon Paris, Emmanuel Augustus, Augustus in his last fight, Julio Diaz versus Pablo Miranda, Kendall Holt versus Lennon Arroyo, Daryl Cunningham versus Alberto Mercedes, and Marcos Oliveira versus Demetrius Jenkins. At the Estadio Benorte in Culiacan, Mexico, Fox Sports, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., 41-0-1. That one should be and move over into the loss column. Versus Billy Lyle, 22-8. Underneath that is Saul Roman, 33-8, versus Michael Bedina, 24-2-2. In South Africa, you have, I'm going to totally screw this name up. Joihi, 21-0 versus Katsunari Takayama, 24-4. Yeah, I'm going to try. That name is funky. For the IBF strawweight belt, Cassius Bolohi versus Argendis Mendez rounds out the card, which also features Philip Ondu. The Arena Coliseo in Guadalajara, Mexico, Rigoberto Alvarez, 26-2 versus Austin No Doubt Trout, 21-0 for the WBA junior middleweight belt. I'm going to go ahead and make a pick on that and say Austin Trout takes it. And that is your weekend fight TV schedule. Actually, some of those are off TV. But you also have another 360 card happening with Jason Estrada taking on Franklin Lawrence in the late-minute replacement for the Mallo-Manny Cazada fight, which actually a lot of people said that was kind of, you know, not the most high-caliber fight, but I think it could have been like a Shannon Taylor, Vinny Mandalone kind of fight, you know, just two guys going at it. But the replacement fight's pretty good, too. But there you have it. Full
there you go.
Full of fights.
Full weekend full of fights. You're definitely going to get your feed if you're a hardcore boxing fan. And like I said before in the past, if you're listening to the show right now, you are definitely a hardcore boxing fan because this is exactly what we like to do. We like to talk about boxing consistently. We like to make sure that we watch and catch all the fights that are happening out there. You know, sometimes we become hermits a little bit. You know what I mean? We kind of shut out the real world because we're so busy consuming ourselves with boxing and stuff. It's not a sport to us. It's definitely a lifestyle. Okay, but we're going to shorten up the show today. 2 hours of boxing here. Normally we go 3 hours of boxing and stuff. But we are gathering up a great show for next week. We'll make some early announcements next week of who we're going to have on. I think you guys are definitely going to be happy. I know we didn't have a whole lot. We only had Mr. Trout come on the show here and stuff, but we've just been extremely, extremely busy. I'm going to be having a chance to go down and see Dornier. I was supposed to do it today, Gabe, with Robert Garcia. I just didn't have enough time in the day to get out there, so I'm going to do it next week to go sit down and watch Dornier. I believe Mikey Garcia is going to be down in the Bay. I'm not really sure. I have to kind of catch up with Robert. But also, I'm going to be with Eloy Perez, the Prince, and watching him. He's getting prepared for his upcoming fight. I wasn't told who he's going to be fighting, but I will be told by Max Garcia, who is his head trainer, and who's going to be fighting, and some film and get something up here on the YouTube and stuff. Conky Jungle always doing a fantastic job here on Leaving the Ring. They have joined the Familia along with you know, Geo Image and Sal and Art from Stand and Fight. You know, our PR Red, who looks like the father of Canelo. If you don't believe me, go to my Facebook and you'll find out. It's right there. Big old picture of him standing next to El Canelo, side to side. And Canelo looks like, you know, he has that look on his face like, Daddy, is that really you? Red Man was that. He called me up right away. He's like, man, take that picture down. You're messed up, bro. I said, hey, I'm not the one that, you know, gave you you redheaded, bro. Blame the old man, you know. Anyways, man, it's always great. It's always fun to speak to everybody here on Leaving the Ring. I appreciate all the calls, me and Gabriel. You want to send us anything, questions, or you want to talk, continue to talk boxing with us, you can. You can submit it to at leavingtheringatgmail.com. Be sure to go check out the website. We always have new content up every day. We try to do it every day, you know, but if not, it's every other day. We have our boxing feed on there from There Will Be Blood, fightshow.com, which is our news feed and stuff. And then you can also catch up what you missed, okay? You can always re-podcast or get it on iTunes, the show. But then again, man, hey, thanks again, guys. Have a great night. Hey, Gabe, brother, I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. I'll catch up with you next week. Have a good weekend.
You too.